Welcome to Wild Utah, the podcast of the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. I'm Olivia Juarez. While physical distancing measures to prevent the spread of coronavirus have kept many people at home and have overall limited in-person contact between people, gateway communities at the edge of public lands are hardly catching a break. KUER has reported that Arches National Park visitation remains about the same now as it has for this time in March and previous years. Spring is arriving, and desert vacationers are still heading to southern Utah to see it. So residents and healthcare practitioners in places like Moab, Utah, are doing everything they can to stop the transmission of coronavirus in their small rural communities. Communities particularly vulnerable to stress on healthcare, groceries, and other vital resources during a pandemic. There's one thing they need all of us to do first, and that's to deepen our roots at home. Right now is not the time to pack your car for a camping trip in southern Utah, and it won't be until our community's health is protected from coronavirus. Today, we are joined by Dr. Dylan Cole, Chief Medical Officer at the Moab Regional Hospital, and Blake Spalding, chef owner of Hell's Backbone Grill in Boulder, Utah, to hear more about why staying at home this spring is imperative for their communities. Spring is here. We've observed the emergence of forsythia, daffodils, and willows as late-arriving turkey vultures soar above. Locals in gateway communities to public lands, like Moab, have also observed desert vacationers arrive to enjoy the spring and rejuvenate from these trying times, despite the fact that staying at home is what many communities need people to do to slow the spread of coronavirus. So today we're joined by Dr. Dylan Cole, Chief Medical Officer at the Moab Regional Hospital, to learn about what this means for residents in these small towns. The hospital recently sent a letter to Utah Governor Gary Herbert urging him to close recreational and hospitality services, including national parks, if within his power, before coronavirus sweeps through the community. Dr. Cole, thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell us about the rationale behind the call to close national parks?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. First off, Olivia, I'm happy to be here and to be able to help spread what I think is a really important message. What I think we need to understand, that's a challenge to understand, is the unique public health and infection prevention challenges that this particular virus and this particular pandemic presents. I will go, you know, a little later into some of the specifics, but just to introduce the concern, the challenge is that what we've come to know in our short time studying and trying to respond to this crisis, this virus can be passed many times by asymptomatic individuals who really have no knowledge of their own infectious potential. The virus also hits people differently in terms of severity and in terms of disease presentation across the age spectrum, yet we're all susceptible hosts. In other words, there's, we believe, really very little immunity within the population to the effects of this virus. That combination of just so many susceptible hosts, as well as what we're coming to call silent spreaders, or individuals that further spread the virus without having symptoms themselves, creates really substantial public health challenges. People coming to areas, gateway areas like Moab, in order to distance themselves and recreate and get out into the outdoors, I can completely understand. And I do understand why people would want to do that. The challenges are that in the process of doing so, people do come together at common shared spaces, whether that is the gas stations to fuel up your vehicle, whether that's the grocery store to stock up on groceries for the trip, and other spaces like the facilities and the bathrooms within the national parks. And furthermore, the more people that are using these spaces, the more that our own residents who work to stock the grocery shelves and who work to attend and manage the gas stations and clean the facilities of the parks and the campgrounds are themselves put at increased risk. So those are some of the specific challenges with this particular virus, in which this creates a really strong public health threat for small communities. We can talk a little bit about some of the projections and modeling numbers that we've done for Moab itself. And I would say that, you know, specifically just for our service area of 10,000 people, not considering the potential influx of visitors, the projections are really quite alarming and quite concerning in terms of our ability to meet the community's need. So at this point, we felt it was important to take action to get the message out that well-intentioned outdoor enthusiasts may inadvertently be introducing this virus into communities that could truly be overwhelmed in a devastating way by its effect.
Thank you for sharing about some of these challenges. That's heavy stuff that I hope a lot of young people will especially really get behind, because I feel like the general sort of sense that young people get is, oh, this isn't necessarily going to affect me. And I especially have a lot of friends who have been working at ski resorts or in fine dining. And, you know, these are the same people who are out of job and now see this as a moment to go spend some time outside, get away from all of the really negative media for a minute and by getting out onto public lands. And so how would you message this to a young person right now who might not have a job and who might think that going out to our public land where they don't necessarily need to be close to a whole bunch of people and where they might not crowd is a good idea? What would you say to them?
Absolutely. I think that's a really important question. I think what our message is to people is that we do recommend, and I certainly would encourage people to continue to pursue those activities that they can do alone without a lot of close gathering together, and that they can do close to their home base, so to speak. We've seen, as you mentioned, ski communities. We've certainly seen the effects of coronavirus already really hit the Front Range hard. Colorado is in the midst of a pretty significant upswing in the overall numbers of infection, and those numbers really started to climb first in the ski towns, in the tourist communities that likely directly as a result of that intermingling of people from all over. Our hope at this point is really to prevent the spread. And while I understand that it may seem like a good idea to get out of a crowded city and to head out into the wilder spaces, it truly is our request because of the effect that it could present in asymptomatic people bringing the virus with them to these little communities where our medical infrastructure is just so minimal. We run a 17-bed critical access hospital. I'm a family physician and practice obstetrics as well. Our entire medical staff, including our physician staff, as well as our mid-level practitioners like nurse practitioners and PAs, constitutes about 25 individuals. And we have no intensive care unit and really no subspecialty internal medicine care like pulmonologists. So the effects of a disease in which the fragile portions of the community will experience really alarming rates of hospitalization and of need for critical care support, we just wouldn't be able to meet that need. Right now, our only tool, our most powerful and our only tool is prevention, and prevention in the form of social distancing. So I strongly encourage people to get what they need in activities they can do close to home to prevent increasing the rate of transmission of this virus into small communities that may as of yet not seen a significant upswing. Our health department did make a very commendable decision in the Southeast Utah district in which Moab sits, and they did put a moratorium on lodging and camping, and that has helped. We have seen a significant slowdown in the number of visitors and tourists to this community, which I think has helped to, as of yet, prevent seeing a real uptick in our numbers. I am concerned, though, quite so, because our surrounding communities, including our nearest tertiary care hospital, to which we refer patients who are critically ill, they are seeing a real surge right now as we speak. And I worry that in a number of days or weeks, they will be at capacity and will really no longer be able to accept transfers of critical patients, which will put us in that difficult situation. We are strategizing and we're working to implement a critical care program here to be able to run a small intensive care unit, a number of beds. But I will tell you that if we look at the modeling numbers, it's really quite dramatic and quite frightening that it really may not meet the need. The most important thing we can do right now is really prevent the spread throughout the country and also within the community by these social distancing strategies. So what sort of things can we do? Well, we can hike, certainly. We can do those activities that have generally lower risk and that we can do by ourselves or with a family member. Certainly at this point, families that are, you know, living together and living in close quarters should continue to recreate together as well. But, you know, we've messaged to our own community that, you know, we do recommend avoiding some of our favorite activities that we normally do with friends, like mountain biking in a group or rock climbing together. Can I just mention a couple of the other specific aspects of this virus that make transmission really so difficult to stop?
Yes.
One of those is that I mentioned already the concept of the silent spreader. Our estimates are that there is a significant number of individuals that may truly not show symptoms of the disease. And in those individuals, they've found that they've tested, you know, in areas and in countries where they've tested widely, they've found a certain number that truly have no symptoms but are harboring a large volume or a large amount of the virus. And they are, in fact, able to transmit that through their own respiratory secretions, nasal secretions and coughing and that sort of thing. And those individuals, of course, have no way to know that they're, in fact, putting others at risk. In addition to that, for those that do show symptoms, sometimes in young people, the symptoms may be that of a severe cold or a flu. But again, you may have the ability to transmit this virus for up to a few days before your symptoms start. So similarly, a lot of the kind of travel that I think puts people at risk, it's not by the young person with a fever and a cough who decides they're going to disregard the warnings and go out and socialize anyways. A lot of this is because well-intentioned individuals who would certainly isolate themselves if they knew they were contagious just have no way to realize because they're transmitting and spreading the virus before they show any sort of symptoms. And then the other characteristic that really came out of a New England Journal of Medicine article this last week shows that the durability of this virus on a variety of surfaces, it's pretty remarkable. We've seen that on stainless steel and plastics, the virus seems to be able to survive for up to 72 hours. That's 3 days. That means that gas pump that you use to refill, you know, in a little roadside stop might have still contained virus that someone transmitted to it 2 days prior. That's really remarkable and helps to sort of see why transmission may be difficult to slow down. Cardboards and porous materials, the virus seems to be able to live up to 24 hours or so. So what we're messaging to people certainly is that really any surface in common and public spaces, at the grocery store, at the gas station, in the bathrooms, et cetera, all these surfaces have the potential to hold virus. And we really need to interact with those spaces and those surfaces as a possible risk.
Okay, Dr. Cole, thank you so very much. You've given us a lot to chew on and hopefully our members a lot to think about if the days start getting sunny after this weekend and the itch to go outside really takes hold. So I appreciate everything that you have to say. Is there any last thing that you wanted to add that you didn't yet?
Again, I encourage people to find those outlets that they can close to home to still get the we all need in this time of stress and this is a challenging time for everyone. We all need to find those ways that we recalibrate and we rebalance and we reset our own, you know, nervous systems. And so I do encourage people to find ways to exercise close to home.
Thank you so very much. You have a really good day.
Thank you.
We're joined by Blake Spalding, chef owner of Hell's Backbone Grill, who has emerged into their 21st season at the world-renowned restaurant outside of Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, while the coronavirus pandemic has changed our communities so drastically. Thank you so much for coming on today, Blake. We wanted to talk to you to hear about what you see going on in the Boulder, Escalante, and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument communities, while tourism seems to not be decreasing that much despite the coronavirus pandemic. Can you tell us how you and your communities are responding and, you know, what you just see going on in your community right now?
Sure. Well, so I want to start by saying that Jen and I have been, we're big advocates for public land use. And really the reason we started the restaurant was to be a warm hearth here for people who are experiencing the wilderness and the kind of amazing, vast natural resource that is Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. This season, you know, we opened for 2 days and just realized I read a lot of news. I'm definitely a political junkie and a news reader. And we opened with a lot of fear and concern. Our opening day was March 14th, and we have about 45 employees. And so we had done orientation, and we opened for 2 nights. And then just really, Jen and I, listening to our guts, just realized that it was not feeling good to be open. And the big reason why is because we didn't want to be an attractive nuisance that would draw people here right now. In my estimation, and I know it's really controversial right now because a lot of people are like, this is the perfect time to explore public lands. And I suppose for those of us who live in these communities, there's real fear. And so we closed before the governor put in place the order to close by a few days. And I was so relieved when he did. And then we did take out for a few days. And then even that felt really dangerous, just because people were just showing up and their kids were running everywhere and they're touching everything. And they would insist on coming in the dining room, and we were insisting that they couldn't because of the governor's rules. So it's not, I would say that in general, most public land users are thoughtful people, but as visitation at Grand Staircase has dramatically increased with the state's in-between promotion for the national monuments, we are getting some people that are less aware of the nuance of how to interact with a monument. Because the thing with monuments is that they're largely wild, and we don't really have, unlike a national park, there's not trails and there's not obvious places to go to the bathroom. There's not like a law enforcement presence and things like that that kind of keep people safe. And so I was talking to the head nurse at our little clinic in Escalante yesterday, and she said it's been really hard. Like, they had a tourist walk in, obviously sick, coughing, and, you know, terrified everyone, even though all the doors have signs that say, if you're sick, stop and call. So it's more about the random tourist that isn't thoughtful about the impact on the small community. I read an article last week in the Washington Post that said that in rural communities, a pandemic like this is likely to have a 60% higher mortality rate, similar trajectory with a bad flu. And then the reason is we just don't have access to healthcare here. The clinic is 40 minutes away. But, you know, it's in our whole county, which is 5,000 square miles. To my knowledge, there's not one ventilator or respirator or even a bed for someone who gets really sick. So we are doing that thing where we, the people who live in really remote places do, where we're just stocking our pantries and planting our gardens and going to ride this out. But what we don't want is to be interacting with a public who may or may not believe that this virus is a real thing. I am suspicious of the people who are traveling right now. I'm kind of like, why aren't you at home? Aren't you scared too? We're scared. You should be home making meals in your kitchen.
So on that note, what advice would you want to give folks to help them choose staying at home and enjoying what spring is bringing in their own communities rather than choosing to go out on something like a camping trip in your region?
Yeah, so I had a really interesting phone date with my friend Rebecca Solnit last night. She's kind of a great mind who's written a lot of books, including books about disaster and what can happen in a disaster in terms of revolution. And I think the best way to think about this time right now is like Mother Nature is asking us to take a pause and not to be driving in our cars and not to be flying in planes, and instead think about how we can help the planet recover. You know, it's really interesting to be outside in Boulder right now because there's not really planes flying overhead anymore. And I love thinking about Vegas as sort of completely shut down. Now, of course, I'm sad for all the workers and I'm sad for people who have economic insecurity and all of that. But I worked for Greenpeace when I was in my late 20s, and I did a lot of work on climate crisis back then, nearly 30 years ago. And people just, no one's still really listening. You know, I mean, we have Greta Thunberg, who's our great champion right now, a 16-year-old, but it's been so hard to get the ordinary world citizen engaged in saving the planet. And I feel like Mother Nature has us in a timeout, and it's a really great time to spend in almost like in a retreat and in reflection about what we can do to deepen our commitment to saving the planet and our commitment to sustainable systems, our commitment to getting out of the sick systems that we're trapped in, and really just to see that we can sort of stop everything when we think a lot of people are going to die. We know a lot of people are going to die from climate crisis. So why aren't we treating that with the same sort of sense of urgency? I feel that this virus is almost here with a message for us, like you can stop everything, you can slow it down, you can take a pause, you can consume less, you know, you can let go of your desire for material comforts and gains for a minute and really have a period of reflection. And so, you know, I'm sad to have my restaurant closed. I love my restaurant, but I'm also really, I'm opening up a line of inquiry with myself and with our staff about, you know, how to do it better even, you know. And of course we have a big farm that we started in 2005. We'll be planting the heck out of the farm this year, and we're just going to be waiting and seeing how long this lasts, you know, until the danger passes. But I'm also Buddhist, and I, you know, have vows against causing harm. And so I don't want to have my restaurant be a disease vector. You know, all it would take is one person who's sick coming in here and sneezing, and we could spread this pandemic all through the community and all through, really all through the West. And that is terrifying to me, the sort of idea of asymptomatic carriers. So scary. And so anyway, I'm relating to this like it's an opportunity for us to see what it might look like if we addressed climate crisis seriously.
Thank you so much for sharing that. It's definitely a sentiment that has taken hold of me based off of a poem that a friend sent to me on my social media called An Imagine Letter from COVID-19 to Humans, which is basically just that. Yeah. Stop.
I want to hear it.
Just stop. It is no longer a request. It is a mandate. We will help you. We will bring the supersonic high-speed merry-go-round to a halt. We will stop the planes, the trains, the schools, the malls, the meetings, the frenetic, furied rush of illusions and obligations that keep you from hearing our single and shared beating heart, the way we breathe together in unison. Our obligation is to each other, as it has always been, even if, even though, you have forgotten. We will interrupt this broadcast, the endless cacophonous broadcast of divisions and distractions, to bring you this long breaking news. We are not well. None of us, all of us, are suffering. Last year, the firestorms that scorched the lungs of the earth did not give you pause, nor the typhoons in Africa, China, Japan, nor the fevered climates in Japan and India. You have not been listening. It is hard to listen when you are so busy all the time, hustling to uphold the comforts and conveniences that scaffold your lives. But the foundation is giving way, buckling under the weight of your needs and desires. We will help you. We will bring the firestorms to your body. We will bring the fever to your body. We will bring the burning, searing, and flooding to your lungs that you might hear. we are not well. Despite what you might think or feel, we are not the enemy. We are messenger. We are ally. We are a balancing force. We are asking you to stop, to be still, to listen, to move beyond your individual concerns and consider the concerns of all, to be with your ignorance, to find your humility, to relinquish your thinking minds and travel deep into the mind of the heart, to look up into the sky streaked with fewer planes and see it, to notice its condition, clear, smoky, smoggy, rainy. How much do you need it to be healthy so that you may also be healthy? To look at a tree and see it, to notice its condition. How does its health contribute to the health of the sky, to the air you need to be healthy? To visit a river and see it, to notice its condition, clear, clean, murky, polluted. How much do you need it to be healthy so that you may also be healthy? How does its health contribute to the health of the tree, who contributes to the health of the sky, so that you may also be healthy? Many are afraid now. Do not demonize your fear, and also do not let it rule you. Instead, let it speak to you. In your stillness, listen for its wisdom. What might it be telling you about what is at work, at issue, at risk, beyond the threats of personal inconvenience and illness? As the health of a tree, a river, the sky tells you about the quality of your own health, what might the quality of your health tell you about the health of the rivers, the trees, the sky, and all of us who share this planet with you? Stop. Notice if you are resisting. Notice what you are resisting. Ask why. Stop. Just stop. Be still. Listen. Ask us what we might teach you about illness and healing, about what might be required so that all may be well. We will help you if you listen. And that is an Imagine letter from COVID-19 to Humans by Kristen Flintz.
Damn, that's amazing. I mean, I really agree. I feel like this is a call for us to stop. And so, while I get that people don't want to be in their house and they want to come here, I want to say really, like, what are you running to? What are you running from? How can you tend your life where you are? I read some things even this morning on Facebook where people were like being mad that people in public and gateway communities of public lands aren't like welcoming them right now. But I think that to have some compassion for, you know, there's 300 people in our town and we rely on each other. There's families. You know, if somebody gets hurt, if they come here from somewhere else and they're a carrier and they roll their car or hit a deer, the sheriff has to interact with them, right? I mean, they can say there are no impacts, but they're only no impact until they get lost. And then everyone in town is required to go out and look for them morally. They only no impact until they run out of gas. They're only no impact until they realize they don't have anywhere to poop, you know, and they're pooping where? On the side of the road. I think people take their public lands for granted too. And partly what they take for granted are the communities that serve those who come to appreciate them. And at this moment, I think it's okay for us to request that people just wait until the danger is past and understand that we that live here are sheltering in place, and it doesn't help when people come from other places and bring their needs and their potential disease to us. You know, we will welcome them with open arms again once the danger is past. But right now, I would hope that people just stay home and get a deeper connection with their own neighbors and communities and plant a garden and take this next, what I think will probably be a few months, pause to really make a reckoning and take an accounting of the way that we live on this planet individually. You know, it's not enough just to buy your spinach organic in a plastic tub. It's time that everybody grows spinach and then goes without when it's not available. But really to think, to learn like how to be with this world in a way that supports its healing. So I love that message from a virus. Damn. I mean, that is really extraordinary, and I'm going to be giving that a lot of thought.
Okay, Blake. Well, I'm so grateful for the thoughts that you took the time to share with us today. Is there any last thing that you wanted to say before we stop our recording here?
There is one last thing which I want to say, which is that if you're thinking you want to come here right now and you feel sad that you can't, I would invite you to really get involved in activism to save our national monuments and national parks, because they're under tremendous threat and pressure right now. But I love SUA. And so what I would say is, if you're listening to this SUA podcast, if you find yourself with extra time on your hands because you aren't going to be driving out here this spring, I would invite you to write letters to all of your representatives and senators, or make calls, and just really double down on your advocacy for saving these places so that they are here long after we're gone, but for our great-grandchildren's great-grandchildren, who are surely going to need them even more badly than we do. So using this moment of longing to be here, channel that into a longing to preserve it. That would be my heartfelt request. So then my other thing would be just to say, please do everything you can to stay safe and take it really, really seriously. Because we're in an extraordinary moment in our history. None of us have ever seen anything like this. There's no person alive right now who has seen what this could do. And I think there's a impulse to not believe that it could harm us, but I think it's going to cut deeply. And I think it really is going to be up to all of us to shelter and protect each other by not spreading this virus and trying to do everything we can to be compassionate and loving and kind and thoughtful and really self-reliant right now, read books. And yeah, like that. I'm wildly grateful to SUA. You know, we have deep, deep connection and love for SUA and all of the work that you all do. I bow deeply to you, and please stay safe. We need you on the other side.
Okay, Blake. Thank you. Same to you. I wish the best to you and everybody in the community that's trying to hold with each other and keep each other safe. Thank you for sharing this message. I think it's going to mean a lot to our members and hopefully inspire them to make the right choices.
I hope so. And I love our people who love public lands. We need a break for a moment. We need the support of being able to just take care of ourselves and our families and our gardens.
Nature's healing beauty is happening right now in our homes. You don't need to find it in our wild public lands. Doing so makes rural community members significantly more vulnerable to harm from coronavirus. So we can all do our part to help prevent the spread by finding wild nature popping up in the alleys, gullies, sidewalk cracks, and other places that nature has always been in our own cities and towns. Wild Utah is recorded at SUA's main office in Salt Lake City on equipment purchased through the generosity of our members. Our theme music is written and performed in Moab by Haley Noel Austin. Our producer is Jerry Schmidt. To stay informed about current events at SUA, visit us at sua.org and click on Get Involved to discover how you can join the movement to protect Wild Utah. To receive information and alerts via text message, text the word Utah to 52886. That's the word UTAH to the number 52886. Follow the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance on Facebook, on Instagram at Protect Wild Utah, and on Twitter at Southern UT Wild. And be sure to subscribe to the Wild Utah podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. Visit suwa.org/podcast for additional ways to subscribe and to access our archive of previous episodes. On behalf of SUA, I'm Olivia Juarez. Thanks for taking the time to listen. We hope you can join us for the next episode of Wild Utah.